I don't want to infiltrate all the youth and young adult spaces so they have no space to themselves. But I want spaces where we can be together. And I don't think we can take these things and make them one thing, but I think we can plant things in the center that will draw on both.
Welcome to UU Expressions Love in Real Life, a 10-episode docuseries that discovers, celebrates, and challenges how Unitarian Universalism is practiced across Canada in 2024. I am Amber Bellmar.
And I'm Erin Horvath.
And we are the Canadian Unitarian Council's Justice and Equity Team. That was the voice of Reverend Ann Barker calling us to imagine the proverbial well in the middle of the village. Intergenerational UU communities aren't just a beautiful aspiration. They are one key to a long-lasting faith organization. We know that it is possible to celebrate the differences between how each age expresses their UUism while at the same time bridging the cultural gap between them. We know this because there are wise folks in our midst who care deeply about this issue and have done a lot of thinking and experimenting around it. In this episode, we will learn about the realities that prevent engagement between older and younger adults, what's been working, what could help, and what still needs our attention. We'll look at the trends happening within larger society and how these are impacting UUism. You can find links for statistics, reports, and questions for further dialogue in our show notes. And also, you might hear some insider language from our guests, and these abbreviations are also in the show notes.
Now, this is a full episode, so let's delve in, starting with a misconception we noted about volunteerism. So several older UUs said something like, volunteerism isn't what it used to be, or people are just so busy nowadays that they don't have time, as though people are not valuing pitching in to help like they once did. So this sense of frustration, and in some cases I would say even exhaustion, comes from the reality that there are no longer enough people and energy to fuel the UU movement as it once was structured, with various committees, roles, and tasks all run by volunteers. For those congregations still trying to work within this model, the work of carrying on falls on a shrinking group of aging people. Ellen Papenberg and Jim Sands from the Canadian Unitarians for Social Justice, CUSJ, shared their experience with me.
We don't have enough members right now, as far as I'm concerned, to go on much longer than 2 or 3 years, even though the money would allow us that. I think it is necessary to get stronger.
Well, we started out with about 90 people on the mailing list, and now we have over 350.
But those are not members of people of the mailing list.
But they're Unitarians, mostly.
Yeah.
It is our goal to get more people representing from Unitarians, but it's very difficult to get people on the board.
Which is a shame. It seems that it is a problem with volunteerism that people, even older people, say almost in their 50s, don't have the time to volunteer, and they're busy with their lives too much. And it is hard, even though with climate change and so, you see so many young people, and that gives me hope. But to pull them into our organization is very difficult because there is already the climate change groups. And we have a hard time to, and I think in general with Unitarianism, is a hard time to get the people to join us. It's very difficult not to get a burnout as a volunteer, and I think that is probably everywhere the case, no matter what organization you're with. If you're very involved, you have to sort of keep your mind on the goal, whatever the goal is, and say, okay, that is worth it. And sometimes you get tired, sure. I'm very curious if the youth feels that too, or that they all ongoing, gung-ho, and if they don't feel that at all.
I heard similar sentiments from others who expressed feeling tired, trapped, and unsure of how to move forward. And people grieve deeply about this.
And it makes sense for all that grief. These are movements and communities that they've given their blood, sweat, and tears to create.
Our congregations are getting older, and that's across the board.
That's Rev. Ann Barker with the Congregational Life Team. She described what she's witnessing as she works with congregations across the country dealing with volunteer shortages.
Now, some still have multiple different generations represented, but all of our congregations, I think the majority of the people are in an older demographic. And those generations of people remember decades of how congregational life has been. And sometimes it's hard to let go of, but this was so good, when you're trying to imagine how to do things now. But also, these people have worked really hard for decades, and it's their turn to attend and be cared for, and not have to be 80 and be the president of the congregation again. And so that's a challenge. As your congregation ages, then your numbers of people available to do leadership work go down. And so we either have to have a more robust renewal of our humans, or we have to figure out different ways to organize ourselves that don't require the same kind of volunteer contribution. It's a different time and a different culture, and volunteering isn't the same thing it used to be.
Many of these older people seem to be wondering, where are the young people? Why aren't they coming forward to help? Many have been making adaptations for years to compensate. For instance, people serve on boards for longer or on multiple committees.
So where are our young UU volunteers then?
Excellent question, and one that I asked several young people during the interviews. But before we get there, it's important to recognize that the lack of volunteerism is not something that is only being experienced within UUism. It's a far-reaching issue across Canada and beyond that is impacting all sorts of organizations that rely on a robust volunteer base. In 2023, Volunteer Canada released the statistic that 65% of organizations have identified a shortage, attributing this in part to the fact that the demographic that volunteered the most prior to the pandemic were born before 1945. Fearing exposure to viruses, a considerable number did not return to their pre-pandemic volunteer levels. Also, the cost of living, childcare, gas, and criminal record checks have been identified as prohibitive for some folks.
Okay, so this trend is definitely farther reaching than UUism and more complex than a simple lack of desire to volunteer.
Yes. And on top of that, important trends in youth and young adult volunteerism in Canada impact what we are experiencing within UUism. Reverend Linda Thompson with the Congregational Life team pointed this out during our interview.
Younger people in the 30 to 50 range volunteer at a very high rate, but they do it differently than older generations did. And it's hard for people to get their head around, how do we manage being an organization when volunteer practices and habits and engagement has changed as much as it has?
So this prompted me to do some digging to find research that describes how younger people are volunteering.
Let's hear it.
Volunteer Canada reports that youth ages 15 to 30, who make up about 40% of the population, are more civically engaged, digitally connected, and educated than previous generations. They'll engage in formal volunteering in their younger years, likely due to school requirements. However, this tends to decrease as they age. When they engage formally, it's more likely to be for shorter periods or for a particular event rather than long-term volunteering. Gen Z and millennials were more likely than other generations to engage in informal volunteering, with about 74% engaging in direct help to people in their lives. 30% took part in community improvement initiatives, such as coordinating a group or event, fixing up a public space, developing an economic or social project, attending a public meeting, sharing information, and engaging in online awareness building initiatives, such as petitions, crowdfunding, and hackathons.
Okay, so younger people are generally more civically engaged and lean towards volunteer commitments that are short term and have impacts that feel concrete and personal.
Which does not exactly align with the long term volunteer commitments UU congregations have traditionally depended upon, such as joining boards and committees for multiple years at a time, without strongly defined purposes.
Yeah, I can't see younger generations showing up for something that does not have a very clear impact on society. And they may not have the energy to put toward the causes that older UUs feel are important. Like maintaining a religious structure for the sake of it isn't quite a compelling invitation.
Right. There has to be a clear purpose for all that labor. But that doesn't mean that they aren't invested. A young adult who asked to remain anonymous said, "If what you want is people to continue to be UUs, that's very different than if what you want is the buildings to stay alive and the CUC to stay funded."
Oh, Wow.
Yeah. So this young adult is an example of someone who's not prioritizing the established infrastructure while still being very invested in the values of UUism.
It's a matter of priorities.
Yes. And this particular young adult was clear to say that just because they don't want to put their energy into something, you know, say the refugee committee or to fundraise for the building, it doesn't mean that they want those things to stop. It's just that it does not make their heart sing. So they don't want to pour themselves into that.
Okay. So where do they want to pour their energy then?
Well, some of this is seen in the things that young adults are co-creating, such as affinity groups for queer folks, UUs of color, uni camp, the abolitionist work, and gathering online and in person that allows for deep personal connection. These are things that they care deeply about and are willing to invest time in. Broadly speaking, the 2021 State of the Youth Report named the priority issues for Canadian youth are truth and reconciliation, mm-hmm. the environment and climate action, health and wellness, leadership and impact, employment, innovation, skills and learning.
Well, this is interesting because many of the older UUs would say that these are a priority for them too.
Exactly. So this seems like something worth investigating more because on an ideological level, there seems to be a high compatibility between what Canadian young people say they prioritize and what UUs have a long history of caring about and advocating for.
All right. Well, then the next question is, what might help older UUs and younger UUs begin to understand so that they can bridge this gap?
Well, one thing is we should not assume that young UUs are aware of the plight of older UUs and the congregational expression. There was a time when congregations were thriving and continued to function as they had been. While statistics are clear that membership in congregations have been declining for decades, it's only very recently that alarm bells have begun to sound loudly enough that people are speaking about it outside their congregational walls. But that does not mean that young adults are aware of this.
Right. So young adults could assume that the congregational finances that have supported them, like CUC young adult and youth staff and programming and subsidies, are still very much holding strong.
Yes. And I saw some evidence of this belief when some young adults I interviewed expressed a desire for the CUC to put more funding towards young adult programming, which is currently the main body supporting young adult ministries across the country. Until it's communicated very clearly to younger UUs that collectively we have passed the point of being sustainable and renewable, then we cannot assume that they understand how much their involvement is critical at this point in UU history. And unless we communicate a willingness to release the leadership torch and use a considerable amount of remaining resources to seed the next generation of UU leaders, we shouldn't be surprised if no one shows up. It may not be a matter of not caring as much as it is a matter of not knowing.
This feels like a very important point.
I agree. And once all involved understand there is a need and there is a willingness to make room for other leadership, then we have the starting point of why these two groups may want to engage at all.
Why needs to come before the how?
Yes, and to understand how we could approach this, let's explore some of these other themes that arose. In my conversation with Camellia Jahanchahi, a young adult who facilitates Rising Together, the group for UUs of color, I asked her how many youth and young adults she thought were connected to congregations and why there aren't more.
And at least half in terms of still going. Certainly more of them, especially some of our youth, went more as kids and then the trend. They leave when they're teenagers and they find other things that they're interested in, ways to spend their Sunday mornings. And then they go join the workforce and then they don't have free time again until their 40s. That's kind of how it works with the weekends. I haven't had a weekend since I was 18. Like, I'm 31. You know, like these things disappear. Hopefully I'll have one again soon, but so a lot of it is scheduling. Yes, the treatment and the perspectives and the topics and all of those things come into it, but a big chunk is Sunday morning is I'm either working or I'm desperate to sleep in before I go to work. I'm not going to make time to go to church on a Sunday morning. And with so much respect for my love for UUism and the love that I know my youth and young adults have for UUism, they also are either working or desperate for an extra hour of sleep before they go to work on a Sunday or catch up on their studies or do other things. And that is a challenge. I've been a DRE and I've been an RE assistant and I worked in that world for a long time. And that was kind of always how it went. We would get a lot of younger kids, but by the time they're teenagers, they have jobs, they have soccer club, they have other things. And then we lose them unless they're really, really dedicated or come from families that are really, really insistent, which then those kids are kind of hit or miss as to whether or not they actually like it or not, because you don't want to force somebody to do anything. But it really isn't until mid to late 30s and 40s that people, I think, from my perspective, actually have some semblance of free time again. And even that, it's only people who have the financial stability to have free time. That's a hard thing, which is why I think branching out of Sunday morning for UU affinity groups and expressions is really vital and important. It's not to say that scheduling has been easy. We've also changed dates a few times and time a few times. Now we're meeting on Wednesday evenings, 7 to 9:30, which was not ideal, but it is what we could all fit together. That's just a hard part of things. I kind of wish church was like on a, I feel like a Saturday afternoon would be, you know, like a 1 to 3, something like that.
Scheduling is a big deal. Hosting worship, which is basically the main event for most UU congregations at the precise time that younger people are the least likely to make it, is a barrier to their full inclusion.
So an older UU group that is wanting to be more inclusive of younger UUs might experiment with meeting on a weekday evening or during an afternoon on the weekend instead of the traditional Sunday mornings.
Yes, and I can imagine our audience might be thinking, we could move our weekend event to a weekday evening and still not have people show up if they don't prioritize spiritual community.
Let's tease that idea apart. If young adults are not prioritizing weekly spiritual community, is it because they don't care about this? Or is it that there's something more pressing? Or is it that the ways congregations do their get-togethers is not their cup of tea? Or perhaps they experience ageism or microaggressions?
Right. The Young Adults and Beyond Final Report, which is linked in the show notes, speaks about each of these being factors for the young adults they interviewed.
And on top of these known issues within our movement, we need to move back and consider this time in history with a wide lens to see what other trends are happening. And while many of us probably would like to forget about the COVID-19 pandemic, there are important after effects that extend past whatever physical aftermath some of us are enduring.
COVID was a big interruption in congregational life.
That's Rev Ann again. In our interview, Ann and Rev Linda shared the lingering impacts the pandemic has had on the social fabric of our UU communities.
Our groups were really good at getting online so people could stay connected. That was almost miraculous. But it worked just like it did everywhere else in the broader community, where if you were on a fence about anything, about a job, about where you lived, about your marriage, anything, during the time of COVID, you made decisions and people went one way off the fence or the other. There's very few people who just kind of hummed along as if nothing happened. And so if anybody was thinking about doing something else, then they might be gone.
If anyone had habits that were pressing in on the I'm going to be part of a congregation habit, that was another part of the interruption. Families who used to make it a thing that they did is go to services on Sunday morning and engage, got used to hanging around on Sunday morning and going for walks in the park or whatever it is they did, because kids did not want to be online during COVID for UU community life. The number of children just dropped off really because they were doing it for school. So we lost a lot of kids and families got engaged in other ways because you have to take care of your children. And in some cases, we're seeing those families come back, but we have absolutely lost many because new habits have been formed. But in talking to religious educators, which Ann and I do frequently, what we've heard in some of the congregations is we've got some older kids back and we've got babies happening, but there's this hole in the middle of the donut.
Right.
Those people have been lost. Yeah.
Youth have structures, right? Youth have structures that call them back. So if they were involved, there's a structure that pulls them back. And if you have new young families, you're looking for how do you get together with people? It's a new habit that you're forming, but that in-between piece has really been interrupted. And we all know any habit you have, no matter how well established it is, you stop doing it for 2 years. You don't suddenly flip a switch and start, and you certainly don't pick up where you left off. One of the things religious educators have told us is that they're noticing a totally different way of interacting amongst the children. They don't have the same social skill habits. And so a lot of them are focusing primarily just on connection, which is a thing we all need, because that's what the kids need to figure out how to be connected. Before, they're not worrying so much about program and meaningful content. They're working with connection.
And teaching children how to be in meaningful relationship, how to make decisions grounded on values, all the things that we want for ourselves from a spiritual community. That's what mattered. Whereas earlier generations wanted their kids to learn. When I was a kid, I memorized Bible passages. No one ever wanted you kids to do that, but they might have wanted them to know funky little facts about Buddha or whatever.
On one hand, the routine of attending church has been interrupted and people are making other choices of how to spend their time. We do see some people re-emerging, but the focus is different, especially where children and youth are involved. In those cases, people are looking for opportunities to be together relationally, to practice relating.
I would describe it as a desire to be together, not necessarily in the ways that people may have engaged before.
And it isn't necessarily a bad thing that people are coming out of the pandemic with different priorities.
COVID has been a great disruptor and a great prioritizer that has required us all to approach life intentionally. So there's an opportunity here for congregations to let go of busy doing and replace it with intentional being.
Wow. Well said. There is an opportunity to let go of busy doing and replace it with intentional being.
Yeah, and this is not only for families with children that are trying to, you know, catch back up with socializing, but with the various other demographics that have not come back yet. When we consider young people in light of the pandemic, it feels important to recognize that they have not come out of this unscathed. Here's Casey Stainsby explaining what she is witnessing.
I also wanted to speak to the challenges that they're living with these days, because I think that's really real and a really big part of this conversation. The young people are not okay. I don't think any of us are okay on a big macro level. But young folks especially, and elders too, as like the canaries in the coal mine of the world that we're living in. And what I'm seeing with the young folks who I work with more closely is that there's a lot of anxiety, a lot of depression, a lot of material needs, like young adults. On our Discord server recently, there's been a lot of conversation about housing insecurity. People are like just really facing some like very real material crises in their personal lives that are, you know, personal and collective. Income levels, just trying to make enough money to live in this world that we're in right now, accessing healthcare, accessing mental health care, conflict with family. I could list like a litany of things, but I think I just want to lift up that our young people do have a lot to offer. That's always true. And they really need support. They really need care and attention from those of us who have some of that to offer, right? Some more stability in our lives, some more resources, some more just attention, relationship, care. That's something that I want us to all hold to, is not just what can we get from the young adults and the young people, but also what do they need and how can we support them?
The young people are not okay. This time in history is tough for everyone, but wow, especially for our young people.
And we need to keep this in mind when we wonder why aren't they showing up at church or to volunteer on a committee. When life becomes precarious, then priorities shift to survival.
And like Casey said, there is an opportunity for faith communities to show up and embrace people who are struggling. But, you know, it might not be like asking them to serve on a board committee.
And it might not look like asking them to do anything at all. What they need is to be able to be present and share their needs in a vulnerable way so that their faith community can hold them. They need a support system that will help them get through life. Part of the COVID disruption and reset is discovering what it means to be together in a meaningful way that meets each other's deepest needs. As a couple of young adults told me, volunteerism is an activity for those who have enough of their basic needs met that they have time and resources to share with others.
This may be a bit of a mind shift for those you use who remember the days when one income was all a family needed to thrive and the general welfare of everyone was stable enough that asking people to volunteer their time was a reasonable thing to do. During those times, it might have been common for people to have steady, good-paying jobs that happen weekdays from 9 to 5. But that isn't the case anymore in an economy where casual and temporary work has become the norm. The cost of housing is out of reach for most of our younger people.
And this is all true. But again, it's not without hope. Here's Casey again with a practical solution.
something I've noticed and is very true in my own life, is that paying young adults to stick around and contribute to religious community is a great way to get them to stick around. For myself, in my early 20s, I would not have been attending church regularly if I hadn't gotten a job in a church. And all that experience has like led me down this path. You know, I may or may not have ended up here otherwise, going towards professional ministry, but it's definitely helped. It's definitely kept it in, you know, my experience the forefront of what I'm thinking about.
She went on to describe how the Canadian Unitarian Council has taken the approach of paying young adults to run young adult events.
How many tiny contracts do we have for various things, for coordinating conferences and facilitating and coordinating food and various things like this, that I think is just a real reality of young adults' lives. It's like we need to prioritize the things that are going to put some money in our pockets. Doesn't mean that we wouldn't want to do it otherwise, but we just have to make that choice to prioritize things that are going to pay us. The more we can offer that as a community, the better for everybody, I think.
We're doing a good job in that we're paying young people for their time, but we should be conscious that the piecemeal nature of the work lends to their feeling of instability and insecurity and mirrors the work environments many of them are facing in society. I'm curious, have you gotten a sense of whether UUs are interested in exploring ways to become financially sustainable to be able to pay younger UUs for their participation?
Generally, no, this hasn't been a huge theme. However, in the upcoming episodes, we'll hear about two UU expressions who prioritize paying young adults good wages for their involvement. Even in these cases, however, there's some hesitancy to talk about things in terms of sustainable business models, employees, customers, and other concepts more commonly used in business. In others I interviewed, there was an aversion to speaking about money, as though it might corrupt the mission in some way, or that emphasizing it too much could signal to others that ulterior motives were at play. And this is too bad, since there's an opportunity to address the social justice issue of wealth inequality by providing good paying jobs while meeting some of the unmet needs of young adults who are expressing how unstable their lives have become.
Theologically speaking, I can see why it might feel like a big switch for you used to imagine that creating good jobs could be one of the ways that we show up in a world where the gap between the wealthy and the poor is ever widening and treating workers as dispensable is worsening.
Reverend Danny Weber shared some history with me that helped me contextualize things.
The split that caused the Reformation was the idea of separating being a good person and doing the work of being a good person. Protestantism and Unitarian Universalism is a Protestant faith, came out of the Protestant Reformation, talks about doing the thing to be a good person. Doing good is a part of who we are as Unitarian Universalists. It's a part of what that embodiment that I think Casey was talking about earlier, that recognition that doing the work is being Unitarian Universalist, not just showing up and attending and being present on Sunday mornings or what have you. Not that that's not important. I think it is important to be present for your community and be a part of the building of that community. But the way that you live your life outside of that community is going to be just as important as it is to being a part of that community.
How do we bridge this gap?
We go back to that idea of the precariousness of life right now. I don't think that we can emphasize it enough. On a Discord channel that has 45 people, more than 10% of them are dealing with insecure housing, regularly being told that they are going to be evicted because of X, Y, or Z. 10% of your population, that's huge. Let's not sweep that under the rug, because I think that it's a big part of why people are not present. It's because they're dealing with navigating finances. They're dealing with going to the food bank. And the last thing that they're going to want is to be asked to join a committee or whatever. Like, there is not a significant amount of people who are in my age range who feel like they have that kind of capacity. They're trying to figure out how to live, and all of their emotional, physical, mental energy is going towards that. And then when you think about the other 90%, their housing is coming from parents or residencies at colleges or like whatever else, right?
There's so much potential for us to be innovative simply by applying our values to whatever unique circumstances our young people are facing right now.
And it's something that we'll get into more in the upcoming episodes that explore potential paths forward. Alara Stefanik-Gadet from Loving Justice, the young adult-led prison abolitionist group, is someone who is consistently overcoming barriers in the world in many facets of life. And they have a passion for social justice causes and a real desire to experience deep relating. They spoke about their experiences trying to participate in congregational life. I feel Alara's words are important for anyone who wants to understand the culture gap more deeply.
When I'm creating stronger boundaries for myself from congregational life, which I often do, engaging less or engaging in very specific ways, for me, it's because I feel like congregational community is work and not nourishment. Because a lot of these social justice pieces that I'm passionate about, it takes work to light people up within those spaces. And I don't just like get to move in that space and have that light and fire mirrored. It takes effort to bring it forward, which is not a bad thing. It's just that it's not a spiritually nourishing environment, because spiritually nourishing is when you see yourself mirrored in the collective. That's kind of my personal experience. So I'm pretty specific in how I engage with congregational community and UU community because of that, because they feel like workspaces, which is great. That's my calling. Like, it's my calling to work in those spaces. And I'm grateful for the work that I do in those spaces, but it's a very specific when I'm in those spaces, I guess. And I have other spaces where I feel myself mirrored in much deeper ways that nourish me spiritually, where I'm doing work, but it feels like we're all doing the work together.
Well, that's pretty clear. Engaging with congregations feels like work for them, not nourishment.
Right. And I heard similar things from many of the younger UUs I spoke with. In some cases, the challenge was around feeling present, but not having deep connections. Other times, it was the challenge of having people use the wrong pronouns, even after being told multiple times. In other cases, it felt like work to try to do things differently in a community that hasn't significantly changed anything in years. Whatever the experience, the overall feeling was of expending energy, not gaining energy through their involvement. Alara had some great insights into some of the factors that contribute to UU congregations feeling like work instead of nourishment, and how it shapes their ministry, which started as a religious educator and has recently expanded to include being a minister in training.
Because we have focused so much on the individual, there is not so much a strong sense of a collective. And so that mirroring is less of a thing. Like, you walk in and there isn't as much of a mirroring. It's like you are yourself in a collective. You are not actually like pulled into a collective energy as much. So that'd be the main thing. The interdependent web is another really big piece of our principles, but it's one that we take in like an intellectual way most of the time. We don't go deeper into that, what that connection actually feels like in the world and feels like within our community. So for me, that's like a big piece of my ministry, is how do we feel that interconnectedness? And in order to bring that into my ministry, I have to have a source of understanding how it works. And UU congregations are not my source of understanding how that works. Like, Indigenous circles and like my own dream work is our higher sources of how that actually works and unfolds in the world. Like, the deep feeling understanding of everybody in the space being connected. It's not about being the same.
This is an interesting piece, because so much of UUism has become about each individual's personal quest for meaning. And here, Alara is saying they want to experience being part of a collective, not just an individual within a collective. That's a subtle but important difference, because they crave deep connection between diverse people, not sameness.
In this case, we're experiencing what can manifest when people's attention is focused on creating what works for them and less on what's good for the collective. We have siloed expressions that work for the people in each silo. So young adults are doing what works for them, but are not planning with older UUs, youth, or children in mind. And the older UUs are doing what works for them, but not necessarily planning for the younger adults, the youth, and the children.
And I imagine that once this siloing goes on for a while, we can lose track of the needs and hopes and dreams of each of the different people in these groups, which would make it even more difficult to find our way towards some expressions of togetherness.
Zed from Loving Justice shared there is something tangible they are seeking in the nature of the relationships that they are not currently experiencing in congregations, but would like to.
When you were talking about the classical theater approach, where we all come and we perform this play and then we leave again, to me that doesn't feel as relational, perhaps, and as relationship building, because it doesn't have that element of creativity, which I highly value creativity. It's a very important value of mine. The ability of the worship spaces to be moving is important. The ability to build community in meaningful ways is important. I'm someone who's typically had an easier time building community with people in my own peer group. So I know that for others, like intergenerational community feels really like exciting and accessible. And I am interested always in building intergenerational community. And I actually have more recently, not through UU spaces, but I'm in a choir and I'm loving connecting with people of different generations in that space.
In my experience, it boils down to the depth of relating and the freedom to co-create in a way that feels alive. Zed is not the only young adult who's spoken this way. Was anyone else able to articulate this with examples?
Reverend Danny described areas of cultural differences that may explain the missed opportunities for connection between younger and older UUs. Here's Danny.
Creating spaces where people can be held in the challenges that are happening in their lives, where they can be witnessed. That's a big part of it. And oftentimes it's considered inappropriate to get up during joys and sorrows and speak to how much you're struggling.
Danny goes on to reflect on the types of cultural tensions that can occur when some people value authenticity more than politeness and others value politeness more than authenticity.
Right? Like there, that comes back to the authentic polite situation. Like making people feel uncomfortable isn't polite. So we want you to be polite. And one of the things that I've witnessed a lot is that an older generation, perhaps the boomer generation, perhaps the silent generation, I'm not exactly certain, but they have this tendency of valuing politeness and not rocking the boat, this kind of like sensation of like keeping everything on an even keel and being gentle in your language and all of those kinds of pieces, whereas younger generations have a tendency to value authenticity over top of politeness. And so they will lean into an opportunity to be honest around what is challenging versus being polite and attempting not to rock the boat. And that feels to me like when somebody from an older generation is witnessing that authenticity or honesty, it can often be seen as being rude or impolite. And so that's a pretty big distinction. And how do we witness those moments of authenticity and those moments of realness as a skill or a gift that they can be bringing to the community and not just rude, inappropriate, attempting to rock the boat kind of situation?
Oof, we've seen this play out in our congregations, and I have experienced this myself. Younger UUs share what is real for them, whether it's their experiences of exclusion within congregations, life challenges of extreme poverty, what they do for work, or some other thing they're experiencing, and they can find themselves on the outskirts very quickly.
And the following anonymous quote further emphasizes the point Reverend Danny made about politeness being valued more than authenticity. This is what this person said. The young adults and the youth have been questioned about what it is they want and what it is that their culture is seeking or asking for. And they're being honest and talking about their own personal interpretations of what they want. And it's being perceived as impolite. It's being perceived as rude. It's being perceived as ungrateful. And I think that this is a really significant barrier in community building.
I wonder if this feeling of being experienced as impolite and rude and ungrateful may be one reason why many young adults lean into their affinity groups.
We won't know until we begin to inquire with an open heart to understand each person's unique experience. Discovering a balance between authenticity and politeness is worth practicing, even if it might be difficult for everyone, because time and again, our interviewees expressed a desire to be in community. There was not one of the 27 we interviewed that said that they were throwing in the towel or even attempted to throw it in. In fact, people resoundingly expressed a desire to co-create UU communities as they felt that they were needed now more than ever. Here's Zed from Loving Justice speaking about their return to UUism after being disengaged from the young adult community for a while.
I hope to stay involved. Coming back a little bit, I've been becoming aware of how much responsibility I feel to this community, and the work that I want to contribute to here feels important. And I feel that because I was raised UU, being UU is part of my identity. And so I want to find a way to be in community. For me, it was the community that brought me back into this space. It was the accessibility of young adult community. There were kinds of support that I could only access from this community because these are people who will understand why this feels this way or will be able to put language to words in like a way that no one else could.
Young people are willing to be deeply invested in meaningful causes that resonate on a personal level and result in direct change.
There's a willingness to be called back into UU community if there's something that engages them as co-creators. I'd like to share an exchange between myself and Alara from Loving Justice because it touches on several of the things that bridge builders would be wise to consider.
That's one of the visions that I hold for UU spaces, but it's not one that's like really alive yet. Like it feels aspirational where there's this balance of powers where we can come back and reflect and be deeply connected with spirit. And we can go out into the world and be active political voices. A piece that is necessary is for young adults to understand the depth of the goodness that exists in our communities. I feel like there's a lot of assumptions about the generational divide that some are true and some aren't. We need to really center the willingness as young adults to be relational with people who have different ideas and opinions about the world. And we need to really
hold at the center, like the goodness and the love that exists within our community.
The biggest thing maybe is a willingness to show up and hear young adults, because there are definitely structures within our religious system still that
to young adults look like barriers, like membership fees look like barriers to somebody who
has accumulated student debt and can't afford a membership. That willingness to show up and like actually really hear each other's voices. Everybody coming to the table to have a conversation is critical and central to the possibility of that creation. Our culture right now in our churches, but also in greater culture in Canada, is a very individualistic culture. So like often see that when a barrier comes up to go deeper, rather than being willing to work through it, we just stop because we're thinking primarily from an individualistic, how does this serve me perspective, rather than how can I be of service to this community and how can we together move forward? There's a perspective shift that needs to come into play. And that perspective shift is starting in a lot of the spaces. There's so much beautiful potential with that, right? Inspiration. I do feel with society at large, there's very much, because it's how capitalism works, right? It's a systemic piece of how do I grow and progress? And if this group doesn't serve me in my growth and progression, rather than trying to work as a collective so that we can grow and progress together, we look for other groups.
Of course, it would require some sort of a shift then in understanding of what does it mean when you say now UU youth and young adults, like what are we talking about and how do we address that, right? But then, you know, if you're going to call people back in, because the truth, I think, I don't know, but I suspect that people don't yet realize what's happening and that they once thought that the congregations were very strong and robust entities. And now as these people age, like they're 70, 80, 90 years old. So they're not in that place. And then these young adults left, but not far, far. But, you know, if you're calling them back in, do they realize that it's their time? You know, what UUism will be is going to be shaped by who shows up to co-create what comes next. And there isn't that, I mean, there are still very healthy congregations, but there's more and more. It's happening where, you know, every week people are dying and that's, you know, their end of lifetime. And we haven't discussed yet how to use that knowledge to fertilize what's coming next and the money and the resources and what have you. But I'm thinking a lot about that. How do we call people back in? And then how do we help those people to realize if UUism matters to them, now's the time.
There has to be the space for something new to be birthed. So if we're wanting to be relevant and alive, how do we use the old structures to support something new coming forward rather than as a barrier? It feels like our structures are barriers to the vision rather than supporting the vision in a lot of ways. And so how can we shift that? because we have visionaries. Like, we have so many visionaries within New Unionism in Canada. And we put those visionaries into, like, bits of menial jobs that, instead of supporting the vision, depletes their energy, which doesn't move the vision forward. How do we shift it so that the system is supporting the vision and moving that vision out into the world rather than depleting the energy of the visionaries?
There's a lot to unpack in this one. Both generations experience barriers that they need validated by the other. And the only way to get there is through both parties' willingness to stay with the tough conversations, to not shut them down, but to find a way through the issues together. And then perhaps the most challenging is the process of calling in the visionaries and equipping them with the resources they need to innovate.
And therein lies the challenge and the opportunity in co-creating the bridge. To move towards each other is a balancing act that involves immense trust. On one hand, young adults would be called in to take on the responsibility of upholding UU traditions, while older adults do the challenging work of letting go of those traditions and entrusting the younger adults to care enough to keep their legacy alive. And when it comes to resources, would older adults consider parting with some of their remaining resources to provide some seed money for the next generation of UU visionaries to build what will come next?
And all of that intentionality requires such courage.
Yes, and it is not for the faint of heart. That is for sure.
Okay, so we're getting an understanding of the complexity of the young adult experience. What about the adult adults? Who is responding intentionally to the gap?
I had the pleasure of talking to two people who represent a group of UUs that have taken up the challenge and opportunity of co-creating a UU community centered around full inclusion of youth and young adults. Those were Catherine Strickland and Robin Newton of the newly formed UUs of the Salish Sea in British Columbia. Let's start with a conversation between Catherine, Robin, and myself discussing what prompted their group to start on this adventure in 2023. Here's Robin.
It was the excitement of, in particular for me, wanting to bring the youth culture of Unitarian Universalism into that intergenerational format. There's just so much I admire and love about how Unitarian youth are together. And I also think it meets their needs. We've been hearing that once you graduate from youth group, it's not a bridge, it's a cliff. We want to be more responsive to how faith or worship can be more responsive to the needs of young adults, youth, and a part of what we wanted to do is put children front and center as well. And I think it's really exciting. We have no idea of how we're going to do it. And that's, I think, why it's taking us so long. But I don't think there's a problem with that. We're having worship services and we're having other gatherings. It's evolving. And it's, as Catherine said, I think it's very much a co-creation.
And do you have young adults or youth or children helping you shape it at this point, or is that still to come?
We have a few. I would say we're still working out the basics. And for example, Catherine, I want to give you credit for the session we had with young adults. One of the recognitions is that they have busy lives, but we're very excited about the idea of working with Danielle Weber and talk about how we can be more responsive and we're ready and we know the most effective way of involving young adults. We certainly will. In many ways, we have to get our house in order first. I don't want to involve them in the details of, like, for example, we've been working with Victoria Church as our mentoring church and working to get so that we can get donations, you know, get a charitable tax receipt for. So that kind of logistics, we do have people that I would call young adults that have been very involved in helping us decide how to move forward.
I just want to point out a connection here. This is an initiative that Rev Danny has been supporting, which makes total sense given their special passion and skills for building intergenerational spiritual communities.
Yes, and Zed, the young adult who is involved in the Loving Justice group, also spoke about being involved in the Salish Sea group as part of their return to UUism. The UUs of the Salish Sea were motivated by the fact that some young adults are reporting they feel they have no spiritual community to bridge into once they turn 35. One young adult at their previous congregation felt completely unheard when talking about their shared future. So instead of continuing to push their congregation to make changes against their will, this group left to co-create the space for something new to emerge, even if it was not yet clear what it would become. When they began to really listen to young adults, they received some clear feedback that has directed them to include youth and young adults strategically, but not at every level. Here's Catherine.
When we were asking them about what would a community and a worship and a Unitarian community look like that was felt welcoming for you, one of the clear messages was, we don't want to have to do the labor to create that.
One of the things that young adults said, and this is a young adult who has put in a lot of energy and time in our group, is that, you know, when we were youth, you know, we did all these great things, but we did a lot of the work, and now we're out, we're starting our careers, we're busy. We want to be able to come and enjoy these events, but not have to do all the volunteer work to get them together. So that probably is a good insight to why we don't see an awful lot of young adults, is because they're busy. So can we create something that is actually nurturing for them, given their busy lives and all the challenges they're facing?
This is another innovation that we're trying to do, which is, and this is not as much integrated yet into our culture, but this idea of creating the opportunities for people to contribute in the ways that make the most sense to them. And it kind of a bit goes back to the money conversation. And it's this idea that, you know, this comes from another community that I'm part of, which is things will happen if people have energy and commitment and want to make them happen. If that isn't there within your community, they're just not going to happen. Don't try to force somebody to peel potatoes and make sandwiches when that doesn't fit either with their desire and how they want to contribute or in their reality of what they've actually got to offer. That's a way that we need to evolve, is to really let go of, and this is part of, you know, whether you want to call it white supremacy culture, capitalistic culture, whatever, this idea that we create a plan and then we implement it, as opposed to this idea that things will emerge and come organically and we create space for them and we create a container for them and we create sort of like boundaries isn't the right word, but sort of values around them and allow them to emerge. That's where you get people engaged. That's where you get the energy for things to happen.
Adrienne Marie Brown refers to this approach as emergent strategy. The idea is that through relationship building, you co-create, keeping in mind not only the vision, but the capacity of all involved, recognizing that energy and availability fluctuate throughout different phases and stages of life.
Catherine, Robin, and others in this group have the time and energy to invest into the initiative without asking young adults to deal with the logistics.
It makes a ton of sense to focus on this then, even if it means letting go of some of the committees and yearly events that older UUs have traditionally associated with congregational life.
Here's the interesting thing, though. I thought that I would hear from older adults I interviewed that they valued the activities of being a UU over relationship building, but that wasn't the case in any of the older adults I interviewed, including those that are heavily invested in congregational life. In fact, when the key messages were distilled out, they said they craved the same things as younger adults, which were relationship, conversation, and working towards positive changes in the world. Their strategies and approaches differed, but underneath it all, we have UUs of all ages saying they crave deep connection. Here's an example of what I heard in my conversation with Peter Scales.
I became Unitarian in my early 30s, and I was looking for relationship more than anything. I wasn't looking for liturgy. I wasn't looking for theology.
So isn't that interesting? As different as we may feel we are at times, we all crave connection. I'm wondering, where do we go from here, relationally speaking?
I asked Peter that question. How do we honor these amazing people in a relational way? Because somehow in this beautiful classical version of UUism, where roles and creating the ceremony together, and somehow in that, maybe some of this individuality is missing an opportunity to shine through in a way that would resonate with younger people in a different way than it is right now.
Even if alliances could be made, alliances is probably not the right word, but mentoring opportunities so that if you've got someone who's Unitarian and a grad student and wondering how to get through the struggle of a thesis, and if they don't ask, they will never know that four of their congregants are professors and that the number of PhDs in a UU congregation is higher than in any other denomination, that we've got loads of smart people who on Sunday morning just sort of shuffle in and or bicycle in or stride in, get through the service because they love the community and don't talk about the fact that they were a distinguished professor or a war veteran or a nurse during the HIV/AIDS crisis.
Yes. And then to add to that, then we have younger people who don't, like, they're not in a congregation at all. And so they don't necessarily connect with those folks, period. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, what we're hearing from, I shouldn't say just UUs, right? But just in the world, while there doesn't seem to be a leaning towards being a part of religious institutions as a whole, there are some exceptions. You know, for example, some of the more like charismatic or Protestant, a Baptist type thing. Those seem to still be holding strong, right? But generally speaking, what we see and what I see in the world, like in my own life, right, is people who really do want to make a difference, people who understand that they have the ability to make a difference and have values that would align with UU values, but they're never going to walk in the door to a church or anything that looks like a church. And within UUism today, right, in this moment as we're speaking, there are people that have a wealth of amazing knowledge to share. Is there a way to connect these, right? So where the elders can feel like they are helping to equip the next generation, whether they have got identified as UUs or if they are other folks who uphold values that are, you know, aligned with UUs, as opposed to, like you said before, where people are not being trained to operate and fill the roles of people doing classical UUism. Okay, so then do we just allow that expression to just die peacefully, or do we do something to bring that knowledge back in, to give a blessing, much like how in an Indigenous community, they don't mean to take away something from the elders in order to solve whatever the, you know, current expression will be. It's to honor the elders, but then there's this reciprocating of releasing the younger generation and believing that they have an approach that makes sense for their current world, whatever that looks like, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We know that there are some people doing succession planning inside and outside of UUism, where they're consciously saying what they want to have done with their buildings and what they want to have done with their trust funds and these sort of things. And as we look at some of these questions that we had here, you know, is there a place for the CUC to support these transitions? This, I don't know why the image that keeps coming to my mind is it's almost like fertilizing the next generation of what UUism is. Like, how can we create that as a practice where being an elder is recognized. I'm remembering right now a conversation that happened with one of our Indigenous elders during a sharing circle. And I remember a couple of someone's speaking in succession about the pain that they have in their heart about becoming seniors and feeling like there's no recognition in their traditions for them. And so the only option they have is to hang on to the roles they had, because once they let go, they've let go of their place in the work world, many of them, right? And they've let go of, or have been let go of, their place in their families, right? If people have died or whatever. And then the last thing they have to hang on to is their place within their faith community. And so to your point earlier, saying people are hanging on into their, you know, much elderly years to roles they played, is it because we're not providing what does it look like to be a UU elder and then actually naming it such? Could we be doing something that would allow people to age into the senior years, knowing that there's a role for them to fertilize this next, you know, the generations coming up, right? And then, of course, teaching the 40-year-olds, how do you fertilize the work of the 17-year-olds and 18-year-olds? How can we be doing that as opposed to holding the static understanding of who we are?
Yeah.
Being classical UUs, we're putting on the Shakespearean classical UU production.
Yeah.
And that's it. And if you're not interested in classical UUism, then there's nothing for you, right?
We are the congregation who emotes. And if you are not emoting, be gone.
Something like that, yeah.
You go to the basement where the juice boxes are.
Yeah.
Okay. This bit about formalizing UU eldership feels very significant to me. It feels like a path forward to offer UU elders training, because being an elder isn't the same as just becoming old.
And when it's done with intentionality, there's often a mentorship component built into it, formally or informally, where relationships can be shared and teachings exchanged. A mentorship program is one of the recommendations that was put forth by Danny and Casey in the Young Adults and Beyond final report. A line in the report's closing paragraph states, "Perhaps one of the most important takeaways from this project is that CUC programs alone cannot meet all the spiritual and social needs of young adults. So connecting UU young adults with UU elders is one way to diversify and expand the support network for both young adults and UU elders."
That's a very exciting idea with lots of possibility. It helps us move away from siloing our groups, which is a recommendation that has come up a few times in our research.
Earlier, Alara spoke about the need to move from extremes of individualism into collectivism. And becoming more intentional about roles could help people bring more intentionality into the way we are relating. Instead of being focused solely on what each person wants in their experience of spiritual community, there would be consideration of what is good for the whole.
I could imagine some of our members being excited about experimenting with this. There is a curriculum called The Wise Elder Circle, A Spiritual Journey by Audrey O'Callaghan and Laura McNaughton. I actually took this facilitator course, long story, but what I remember was that it was more about helping folks navigate the world of aging, whereas what I see is an opportunity for something like the Wheel of Life, where everyone fully understands their particular role of, say, the elder or the youth, etc., within the UU community, and that these roles are significant to the cultivation of the culture of the group.
And it's really great to know that eldership is already on some people's radar, and maybe this curriculum is something that could be built upon. Before we leave this section of the conversation, I'd like to go back to Peter one more time. He shared with me what First Unitarian Church of Victoria has been doing collectively to give recognition to people as they enter into their senior years. As we move forward as a national body to consider options like the elders training and life cycle training, it may give us some more ideas of what we could do. Here's Peter.
At First Unitarian Church of Victoria, I don't know how long they've been doing this, but they do a recognition of elderhood, and they've been doing a lot in the past 10 years because a lot of people have been hitting whatever the mark is to be an elder of the church. And in that ceremony, it's usually within a Sunday service, there will be a biography. So the person is asked to come forward and somebody reads their biography, a 4 or 5 minute biography, and includes things like flew a bomber in the World War II, or was a nurse at St. Paul's Hospital in Vancouver in the 1980s, or started child care for First Nations kids, or something like that. So those elder ceremonies, I love them. And then the write-up, the bio, gets put in the newsletter. And while the person is still alive, we get to recognize, oh, you fought against cruise missiles in northern Alberta in the 1990s. Are cruise missiles like fighting a pipeline? Well, kind of they are.
For this final example, I want to share an excerpt from my conversation with Ellen and Jim from the Canadian Unitarians for Social Justice. This segment came towards the end of our interview, and we had been talking about Loving Justice, the social justice group initiated by young adults. Here's a snippet of that conversation.
I'm just thinking about this group that I'm going to interview later on this week sometime, and they're young adults that are interested in social justice. Is there any way for them to be connected to CUSJ without, like, they're going to have a totally different way? Like, if they used Robert's rules, I would be astonished, for example.
We don't use Robert's rules.
I mean, we do.
We don't officially.
Well, no, we have motions and seconds and all that.
Yeah, any of that stuff. I can't imagine that would be their cultural way of meeting. Is the way forward with UUism, and we'll see soon, right, with CUSJ, does it just continue to do its thing until it folds? And then at the same time, this younger group comes together and does things however they do things, and then it carries on? Like, is that what happens? Or is there a way where there's an merger here where there's almost like a handoff of CUSJ to say, here's the entity, it's a legal entity, you don't have to form yourself now, but you might change your bylaws and you might do...
We'd love to do that.
Yeah, love to hand it off. And what did I say? That we can learn from each other, because we are never too old to learn. We are learning all the time. And to learn a different way of doing it, who knows? Maybe this other way of doing it is better than the very rigid way of motion. For legality, it is possibly necessary. I don't know if it is.
Well, you have to have a treasurer. You have to have somebody who's going to be making the agenda.
Yeah,
you have to have somebody do the secretarial work, keep track of what's going on.
The legal requirements for a not-for-profit is probably quite rigid, but maybe I'm totally wrong, and that would be good to find out from them how they are doing it and how they are legally involved in these things and go from there. But we are here. The wheel does not have to be reinvented all the time. So, I mean, it is a shame. But on the other hand, that's life. Maybe we are outdated. We are the dinosaurs and the new group, the mammals, come and we are very successful, right? Something like that. The problem is the structure sometimes gets in the way. The problem is also we have done it always this way, so we will continue to do it this way, and that is a very dangerous precedent.
Well, yes, and then in the case of these young adults that are organizing, right, this is a very personal, this is their friend that they're organizing around, that story, that influence. And so when we talk about them wanting to make an influence, they have probably little to no money to do anything to do with that. Like, so they're starting from the beginning, but they have a deeply personal thing. They may not take on all of the issues in all of the country, in all of the world, but they're starting with something that matters a great deal to them. And so as I'm talking to you, I don't have any outcome required of this. It's just, I'm curious. I'm like, well, is there anything that can happen in this regard to fertilize this next generation of young people? Because they're not going to spend all their time figuring out all the logistics. The younger people are about relationship, typically, not all exclusively, but they're highly motivated to do things relationally. And then, of course, they use totally different streams with the social media and all these various other channels to enact change. But many of them have said that they have a reverence for the activists that have come before them, and they don't want to cut that off, and they see that as like their elders that could be mentoring and teaching. But right now there's a disconnect.
I brought up ideas to the chairman of the board at First Unitarian Church in Toronto, and he accepted anything I wanted to do. He said, go ahead and do it. All you can have to, you know, you go ahead, you know, just do it. And I was so inspired by that. I said, well, what the heck, we organized things, got ourselves in trouble in a little bit, but we did it. We had the support of the congregation, even if it was just the board.
The problem is elders. Sounds like we will have the wisdom. Well, we don't.
We don't have.
We are still young ones inside of old bodies exploring what can be done and never know exactly how to do things. It's still here and there completely new to us. There's some same old things, of course, but we don't want to go that route all the time because it's kind of boring. To have some renewal and so forth would be very healthy, and we certainly would be looking forward to such a thing.
It was so inspiring for me to have an adult tell me, go ahead, try it, do it, here's some money, do it. And in most of my life, you go to adults and ask them for help or something, they have nothing but roadblocks to say, oh, you can't do that because of this, you can't do that because of this, there's this problems. We always did it, yeah. Whereas the Unitarians, that was my inspiration. You know, I said, oh, wow, we can actually have an overnight thing with the kids from all around the United States, that St. Lawrence district, and Hamilton, and you know, we could stay overnight in the church, and all I had to do was be there. It was fantastic.
So herein lies the challenge for this generation of UUs that are older, is to figure out, well, what does it mean to be that inspiring person that says to the younger generation, here you go, you don't have to do it our way. Like, meaning if you have another way of making decisions, then do that. If you have another way of gathering, do it.
Absolutely. But
that's the challenge that we have. When I say UU elders, I'm trying to distinguish between older UUs That's people who just got older. And then people who are looking at it from the wisdom of the next generations, right? Where something doesn't just exist for their own benefit, but that they're looking at what do we need to become to fertilize this next generation coming up.
What a great example of the sense of humor and humility needed to balance out the honor of eldership. It's not a matter of being above the young ones, but being with them, recognizing that you may have lived more years, but that doesn't mean that you know everything or that the learning has stopped.
Exactly. There needs to be a willingness to discover what comes next together. During the Young Adults and Beyond interviews that Danny Weber and Casey Stainsby conducted recently, young adults shared some of their thoughts about the gap and potential approaches to bridging the divide.
One topic of conversation was whether to change the age range of young adults so it doesn't go as high as 35 years. Here's one person's thoughts on that. If we lose the large YA age range, I worry that we will further separate our young people from the old, deepening the wounds of the bridge to nowhere. The long YA period did not heal those wounds. It's just a band-aid until we figure out a better way to really bridge the communities and provide multi-gen and intergen opportunities to connect regardless of age. Shortening the age span of YA is tearing off the band-aid without any plans to actually fully address the injury. I think in general, we need the transitions between age groups to be less abrupt with more overlap and fuzzier edges to make the transitions less traumatic.
Another young adult said, an essential precondition to changing the age range for young adult programming is to make big changes that encourage connections and getting to know one another across age categories within our congregations and across the country. Having age cohort specific spaces can be really special, but you inevitably age out of them, and finding kindred spirits in the larger congregation and organization can be really hard, especially if we haven't had any practice in how to actually become friends with people in different generations.
Based on all the feedback they received, the report emphasizes the importance of building intergenerational relationships. And for sure, there are communities doing intergenerational relationship building. I know that there's some excellent programming happening, at least in the Vancouver area.
Right. And I learned about it from Catherine and Robin, who were inspired by the way North Shore congregation reimagined what worship could look like.
Jessica and Bill have been offering what they call inquiring souls process, which is you take a topic and then what are all the questions that you have about this? And it becomes very much just an open, inclusive, like there's no hierarchy of questions or ideas. It's very much this opportunity to just be creative in exploring these things, these different big ideas. So at North Shore, they condensed the formal part of the worship and had added on this, what they called spirit zones. So for like 45 minutes, there was four or five different options that you could pin. One would be a crafty kind of thing. One would be maybe a movement. One would be more like a meditation. And this inquiring souls one was one that was often very popular. There was a lot of excitement and participation from the older children and the youth. They really enjoyed that format. And then there's the idea that this format lends itself well to intergenerational. Being together in spiritual inquiry seems to resonate for different age groups.
There were fewer and fewer children and teens attending the congregation. We had to rethink Sunday school completely. And so that was how we evolved into having a somewhat shorter service and then spirit zones. The beginning of the service was very inclusive, and then the kids would go down and have a snack, and then we would choose from a number of different options for the spirit zones. And certainly the inquiring souls, I think, was originally created for young people, but really adapts well to all ages. I would say even 6-year-olds could probably participate. You actually brainstorm the questions you want to discuss. And Jessica and Bill have been really great at giving the kids leadership roles. Everybody gets to offer questions, a question gets chosen, people get a chance to respond, and then the young people were taking notes and got to summarize it up at the end. And it was just a really interesting, engaging exercise. There's a little bit of tension right now between the idea that the youth and the young adult, the youth in particular, need their own space in their own group. as well as participating with the larger group. And I think part of it is the recognition that sometimes when you have adults in the room, they end up dominating the conversation, and we'll learn, but I don't think we're quite there yet. When Jessica and Bill are facilitating, I think they do a really good job of giving the youth a lot of the stage.
You have to appreciate the ingenuity of these UUs. They didn't see a lack by any means. They saw an opportunity to bring youth into some central roles, which is brilliant. I would think that the balance of power develops a sense of trust between the youth and adults. If we keep practicing and experimenting, truly, we can be a living example that there is a place for everyone.
It really is wonderful to witness that type of creativity. In the Young Adults and Beyond report, I saw another creative solution lifted up by a young adult this time. Someone suggested young adults could self-organize and craft bids to bring young adult conferences to churches, perhaps with the goal of building capacity within specific congregations. I see a need for more grassroots work from young adults. So here's another option for beginning to bridge that divide, but this time from the perspective of young adults reaching across.
And I'm pretty confident that once we release these episodes, we will begin to hear more and more about creative experiments and ideas that are taking place to build the bridge toward intergenerational communities.
It's challenging work, but it's meaningful work, especially when I hear quotes like this from a young adult who participated in the Young Adult and Beyond research. My heart and soul still feel deeply rooted in Unitarianism, my youth there, and I know those people are still out there. All that love is immense, like amazing, and I think it's probably more than a summer camp kind of love, but I just don't know how to bring it into my life.
Oh, how touching is that?
It is. It actually brought tears to my eyes the first time I read it.
I'm so motivated hearing that young adults desire to bring more than a summer camp kind of love into their life.
Right?
There is a desire to connect. We just need to release our creativity to make it happen.
I'd like to finish this section with the words of two of our staff members. First, Casey, who worked directly with the youth and young adults, and then Anne, whose focus is congregations, comprised mostly of older adults. In both cases, they use natural imagery to draw our attention back to the interconnection of all things.
I really appreciate that stability in my life, that sense of being connected to like a tradition that goes further back than me, my little life. And so, yeah, I don't want to pit that against young adults or against young adult culture or younger folks in like a, I don't know, versus kind of way. What Danny was saying about those event bases being temporary by nature is that because of that, like we need congregations, we need institutions that can be the constant, the rooted. I think of this as like an ecosystem. That is an image I got from Liz James' podcast. Think of our culture as like a forest system, and like you need all kinds of different life forms to make that ecosystem healthy and strong and thriving. And I think of the institutions, the CUC, the congregations, as the trees, the old growth trees that are like solidly there. They're there for decades to hundreds of years. They've got deep roots. They reach up high and they're fairly solid. They don't last forever. They're all part of a cycle, but it's a different timeline to the moss, to the flowers, to the birds and the insects and everybody else who's crawling around. And we kind of rely on those bigger structures to do what we need to do in other ways. We need all kinds of different formats to make this possible. The events that we run for youth and young adults from the CUC wouldn't be possible without the institution, right? And the institution wouldn't be possible without congregations. It's all part of this big network. The nature of being a young person is that you don't often have the resources or the stability in your life or the skill set yet sometimes, or the resources, the financial resources to be able to make those things happen yourself. Like maybe you can once in a while, and that's awesome. And I've certainly seen and experienced that, and it's been extremely magical. Self-seeded events that aren't initiated by one of the institutions. They're really like initiated by a bunch of young adults just being like, let's just get together and see what happens. That can also happen, and that is awesome and beautiful. And we can't rely on that being the format, right? Because it's just not really sustainable.
You asked, how do we take youth and young adults and seniors, how do we bridge this gap? I don't know if we can have a direct path. And that's a really hard thing to say. I would love artificial age boundaries to just gracefully erode like the sand on the beach. And that we honor and respect and pour energy into everything that has life. If a congregation has life, Linda and I are here to help them along in any way we can. It's not one thing. I'm not going out to force young adults into congregations, and I'm not going out to force seniors into being a young adult thing. There's a vitality. Let it not be limited by ages.
Powerful words to end with. There may be a culture gap, and there are people on both sides building bridges across the divide.
In the next episode, we'll take a little detour down a path that reveals itself by way of the youth and young adult culture. What does it mean to show up exactly who you are? Stay tuned to find out.